Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. My co-host, Red Beckman, should be on with us shortly, and I believe he might be right now. Red, how you doing?
Well, I'm surviving, and I don't know what to say other than that I hope that I'm better than I was last week, and I think I am, so I'm thankful for the progress that I've made, it seems. The progress I think I've made. But we'll know more as the weeks go by.
That is wonderful news.
And Terry, let me pop in there. Hi, Red. This is Kate, and you do sound just terrific. You really sound great. Welcome back. And excuse me, Terry, but good evening.
Good evening, Dr. Kate, and welcome on with us.
Yeah, well, I'll be in the background as usual, but I couldn't resist saying hi to my friend Red over there. And Red, I know you rescued your wife from North Dakota, and I'm asking you to send somebody over here to rescue me, please.
Oh, my. Is it that bad?
Not yet. But I just thought that was funny. So anyway, I'm fine, and I'll talk with you all a little bit later.
Yeah.
Well, Kate, have you put your phone out in the North Dakota wind yet?
Not quite yet. Yeah, actually, I did, and so I had to get a new phone today, as a matter of fact. But we've actually had a couple of tornadoes touch down right here in the Bismarck area, and the clouds and so forth. And for heaven's sake, somebody was driving down a major highway here, and her car was hit by lightning. So it's a pretty interesting place.
Montana has had more tornadoes than they've ever had. I think they've had 3 deaths in Montana, and that is just unheard of, to have those that kind of weather. So North Dakota is even more susceptible to that. When I was driving truck a great deal back there in the 60s, I delivered a load of product to Steele, North Dakota. That's east of where you're at in Bismarck. And then I headed back towards Billings, Montana. And as I got close to Dickinson, I could see this nasty, nasty storm coming. And just before it hit, I got under one of the overpasses on I-84, and the hail came down. Oh, my goodness, it was terrible. And they had people hurt actually in the hospital in Dickinson that day because they weren't able to move the people away from the windows fast enough. And it was so bad. And that was on a Monday. On Wednesday, I delivered another load to Steele, North Dakota, came back, and I had to get under the same overpass for the same kind of a storm. Everybody else had their windshields broke and major body damage if they were out in it. But I was able to, I knew what to expect in some of that. So that's just the nature of the beast. But I'll tell you, Minnesota's had, I think they've had almost a record number of tornadoes and such too this year. So it's a weather year, and we're so cool out here, and every place else in the country, they're so warm, so hot. And here we are, cool, in the 50s every night. and usually up in the 70s during the day. So we're thankful for that, I guess.
Yes. Well, Terry?
Yes, we have our guest, I believe, has got a live mic, but I'd like to start us out with a prayer. It's something we've been doing on this show for a while, and I don't want to forget about that. So if everybody will join me in a brief prayer. Almighty Father God, we just want to thank you for this wonderful day. We thank you for all the friends and folks that we have that are true patriots and that have their hearts open to you. And we just ask your spirit to go before us in everything we do in this show, everything we say, everything we think. Open our eyes to truth and help us to share that truth with others. It's in the name of your son, Jesus, that we pray. Amen. Well, let me introduce Mr. Stephen Pattison to everyone. Steve was with us last Thursday night and got us started on a journey of discovery regarding a little bit about how to take this country back by sharing some of the historical things that have happened. And Stephen, welcome back to Walls in Our Minds.
Thank you very much for asking me back, Terry. It was my pleasure, and I want to thank for all the emails I received from the people that listened and listened after the show, because I got a few in the last couple of days.
Well, I've been getting some positive comments, Stephen, from some folks and some people that have been around Walls in Our Minds and Red and I for quite some time, and you know, they're kind of excited to hear what how you were going to kind of conclude things tonight. So I'll leave it up to you. I know you thought a lot about what you were going to say tonight, and you know, for the next 15, 20 minutes, I'm gonna open the floor for you and let you go.
Well, I'm going to discuss a few of the things that I've sent you in emails, because I guess at this point, after our discussions and a couple emails I received, a lot of people on your call doesn't really understand that we've been living under a government de facto, which is well defined in Black's Law Dictionary, since the 1860s, and it wasn't our people that placed in these second constitutions, because the second constitutions were placed in mainly under martial law when the military was occupying, and I would assume there was probably an agent of the Rothschilds standing right there next to him telling him what to do and how high to jump. You know, I'd like to be able to travel back in time and witness some of these things, but that's the only way I could see it happening, because these military people in the 1800s just, you know, they were told what to do and when to do it and how high to jump, and except for maybe the generals, and I don't think the generals were really even out there, because I've read some things about Missouri where the one person that was the general there wouldn't even sign the loyalty oath that they created for all the new citizens of this new government in Missouri that was created in 1865 or 69, I'm not sure of the date. But it's just amazing how they thought they could get away with it. Of course, you know, back in the early 1800s, 1860s, the newspapers were actually controlled just as well as they were today, as far as I'm concerned. I've read articles about it. Plan on posting some of that stuff at some point, if we ever get to the point where we can get 12 good people in each state that would willing to sit down to talk to me on a daily basis or whatever it takes to understand how we got to where we are today. We are no longer sovereign. We are at the point where I sent you an email today, Terry, about a lady that's a congressman. I'm going to see if I can pull it up. I don't remember her name, but she has a video that she was sitting there talking to the individuals that in Congress, and she was calling the Congress a mafia-type organization, which is basically what they are. She was explaining how people that were being closed from the car dealerships knew somebody, and they called their senator, their representative, and they knew somebody, and they put it together so that they didn't have to close their office. So it's not a democracy where we decide, you know, that we want to eliminate so many of these people out here that have car dealerships because we supposedly officially own all the car dealerships under GM at this point because we bailed them out and bought them. But, you know, that's kind of the funny thing that's going on. But back to this project that I wanted to start, there's so many people out there that have been fighting them for 50 years, and most of those people have given up one way or another because they didn't realize who they were fighting. In 1995, we decided that what was happening with the IRS and what they were doing when they were not following what we had determined were the laws, that there had to be something more to that because they continued to get away with doing whatever they wanted to under like a dictatorship. And so we started doing the investigation and found out about this government de facto, and we actually, you know, we have copies of the second Black's Law Dictionary, the third Black's Law Dictionary, the fifth and the sixth and the seventh, and every year they change the definitions a little bit. So, you know, I don't know why they do that, but basically a small group of people and came out and created a new constitution, created a new government for each of the states during and after the Civil War. And they were called the Reconstruction Acts, which basically they changed right then and there a republic to a democracy. And the democracy wasn't even by the people, because the people that placed these new constitutions in were not even the local people within the borders. They were these people that were paid, whatever you want to call it, that came out and actually ran each of the states. Now, they were kind of behind the scene to some extent, and they had front people that they were telling what to do, and those front people were probably elected, which they didn't even really count the votes back then, which was the same thing we have today. I know this is probably, you know, so out of it that most people say that, you know, that this just can't be happening, but stand back and look what's going on today. I mean, they're brokering deals. They're printing money out of thin air. I mean, it doesn't even sound like a democracy. It's like, you know, whatever they want to do at any whatever point. So I'm looking for 10, 12, 15 good men in every state, and I've got a couple in each state right now that's been on my emails for several years that I'd like to put together so that we can have some teleconferencing calls and get them answer their questions to get from A to Z so that you can understand where your power comes from, which is God, our Creator, and that we are free men on the land, and that the people that are there right now do not have any delegated authority from a lawful government, so they cannot be representing us. Voting in their system today is just a big fraud upon the people, which was more or less explained by the hacking the democracy. And I need more people to contact me so that we can have some meetings on a state-by-state issue so that we can get on down the road. Now, the basic plan is, first off, we got to get enough people to understand our history so that they know that we have to recreate almost word by word what was done by our founding fathers. The only difference between our founding fathers and us is that we're already sovereign. We already have free states. We already have lawful state governments with lawful state constitutions. The problem with those entities are that they're sitting vacant. There's no governor running them. There's no other needful representatives and appointed officers to operate those. And we need people to fill those vacancies so that we can open up our old lawful governments and notify when we get our government going, notify the de facto government that they no longer need it. Now, there's a lot of things got to happen between now and then, but again, that wouldn't have to be some kind of a committee where all the people from each state would sit down and talk. I'd be more than happy to tell you, or not tell you, but show you what the founding fathers did and how they got to this point where they had lawful state governments. And it isn't hard because it's already there. It's kind of like, hey, here's the keys to the corporation sitting over here in the corner. All you got to do is go open it, go hire some people to be the governor and whatever and make it work. And, of course, you know, we got to have people do that or we're all down the tubes, because there's no other way of getting our standing back. Our standing is the power that we have as free men, because if we move to China tomorrow, we would not have standing there. We would be free men there, and you could survive there, but you wouldn't have standing to do anything in their government, because it's their government. Just like here, it's someone else's government. We don't have standing there to walk in and tell them to do whatever they are. Now, there are a lot of things you can do to protect yourself with the common law, but without standing, we can't get them to do anything. We can't even open up our lawful state government without having standing. And there's things that need to be done, and I need interested people to contact me so that we can sit down and get everybody down to the 12th grade or graduate from history class to understand what they all need to know. And I realize that there's a lot of things that have been taught to us since grade school through college and beyond that has that is not true. Go ahead,
Steve. First thing, let me back up just a quick second. You said you didn't know why they kept changing the meanings of words. We've talked really pretty extensively on Walls in Our Mind. Red and I both have brought this out, as well as some of our guests that have studied it pretty well, are aware that changing the meaning of words and some of our language is precisely one of the ways of deceiving the general population. It is a part of the subversion process, and that one of the things that came out in the book by Martin Babbitt's Illusion of Freedom, which is I highly recommend for everyone to read. He talks in there specifically about how they changed the meaning of the word federal, and it's really funny that the federalists were really nationalists. They really were not federalists. They were really nationalists, and the anti-federalists were really federalists, and so even back then they were stealing a term and twisting its meaning. So that's normal. But here's the thing. Last week, I don't believe you ever really got into the details of the unite and assemble concept. I mean, you've started getting into it a little bit tonight, but I think we need to really be basic on this concept with people. First of all, we are at a little bit of a disadvantage, because there's been some other groups that have taken this concept and have gone out there, and I believe they've either not done a good job of it or they've done a really good job of conning some people. You know, that you talk about the county at large ministry. Our SAMI has, I think they were a good group, but they really the people that came into that were really not very cohesive. They were, and I don't know even how learned they are, but they tend to not really have any impact other than within their own little circle of people, and they tend to be very disruptive and reactive with each other. We've got the Trust Plan, we've got the Restore America Plan out there. All of these groups have used this same concept of trying to assemble a group of people. In some cases, they even call them a common law grand jury. Those notices that went out to all the governors for what I call trap, the Restore America Plan to the governors, those came as declarations from a so-called common law grand jury from all 50 states. So we're following in a pattern of that, and what we've been pushing here on Walls in Our Minds is that people get organized at the grassroots level, and really that's really what you're talking about, is people getting organized at the grassroots level like a well-regulated militia, only you're only talking about enough people to be considered like a common law grand jury would be. One of the things that I'm seeing out there is that unless you have some means of enforcement, you can come out with a declaration or a presentment, or call it an indictment if you want to, you can do all of these things, but if you don't have some way of enforcing it, then it's like we've been saying for a long time, without the Second Amendment, the First Amendment doesn't have a whole lot of teeth, because you've got to have a way of enforcing your rights and taking a stand for those rights. And so we've got these, you know, American grand jury's been going out there and assembling people and calling it a common law grand jury and putting out presentments. But again, it's led them nowhere except in the case where Walt Fitzpatrick did it in Monroe County and discovered the corruption that was going on. And now it's gotten to be much bigger than that presentment, because they're no longer talking about just the treason of Obama. They're talking about the systemic corruption of the judiciary and how it's controlled our grand jury system across the board. Now, Red and I have talked, and especially Red has talked a tremendous amount here about restoring our grand jury system, which really is the same thing that you're talking about. And we've got to be able to have a way to enforce it. So if people do not organize on a really grander scale than you're talking about on the local level, we're never going to have a means of enforcing these presentments or declarations. So with that as a foundation, I'm going to turn the floor back over to you to talk about how you expect this to get to a point where it has teeth.
Okay, Terry, I guess I'd like to carry on a conversation with you and let the rest of the people hear what's going on. And I'm going to attempt that question, then I'm going to let you come in and say your question or whatever. But the teeth is common law. The teeth is that these people that are working inside the government de facto, most of them from here on up to wherever, I don't know how far it goes, has taken an oath of office, and most of them people take it seriously, and they may have handlers or whatever telling them what to do and when to do it and whatever, but they still understand that oath of office. And we have presented these constructive notices to several United States district judges, and even before that we had acquired their oath of office, so they knew that they had one, and that under this constructive notice, it may not be called that, because what we have to do is go back to something similar to the Declaration of Independence and call it something like that from each of the people within each state, lawful state, that we would command them to do the right thing, because we're going to present to them, just like in the Declaration of Independence, what they've been doing wrong all these years, which is operating under a government de facto, because that government de facto was not placed in with any delegation of authority by anyone. It was unconstitutional, and we got proof of that. So we have all kinds of facts, figures. What we need is a few good men to stand up behind us, because as far as we're concerned, one person could take one of their persons on, and they're going to run from us, because they are operating under sedition right now, under common law, under the Constitution, and that's a very, very bad offense. If we got the documentation of what they've been doing, which, as far as I'm concerned, we've got it with just about every majority a person in each state, that most of those people, like we discussed before, I think there's probably 95 to 97% of all of our state representatives and senators are just clueless what's going on. Now, some of them may know something's wrong. They may be on the take some way or another, and they don't like it, but they don't know their way out, and we're going to provide them with their way out. Their way out is either they need to come forward and correct the sedition, or it becomes a treasonous act. And, of course, we hope at some point when we get enough people in each state that we will be having meetings with each of these sheriffs in each county as we move across the state and give them constructive notices of the facts, so that they know that any of their seditious acts are going to be challenged, and that they have the option to becoming a sovereign a common law sheriff rather than a statutory sheriff. Now, they're actually both, because there are statutes in some states that are common law based and are constitutional underneath the organic constitutions of each state. But this is what we envision, but it's going to take people, just like it took people back in the 1700s, to create this government. Now, the government's already been created. It's like that business. All we need is the keys to go open it up and get a few good people that at least know how to read and write to be the governor and all the other needful representatives, so that we can start having some meetings so that they understand where their power comes from and what documents we're going to provide for them, because most all these documents already provided in Stephen's law book that explains how they took our common law from us, how they did it without any delegated authority. And so all we need is we got the rule books. We got the place to where we're going to play. All we need is a few players on the field so that we can go out and play this silly game that we got to play to get our rights back. Okay, Terry?
Well, I'm just wondering what if Red has any particular comment to make on that.
At this moment, I think I'll try to remain silent for a while. You know, we've got hundreds, and I'm sure there's thousands of people across this country that really have a great concern for what's going on in this country. And, you know, I just hope that a lot of them are accessing these programs because, you know, they need to know that they're not alone and that there are people out there that have information that might be very come in very handy at some point. I've often been asked over the years, how is this system, as corrupt as it is, how is it held together? You know, 20 years ago, I would have never guessed that we would be that we would see the year 2010 without a major overhaul of our system, and here we are. And well, I attended a brainstorming session in Dallas, Texas, back about 10 years ago. And there were some pretty key people there, some pretty successful businessmen and such. And this one fellow, he said, we don't have any more than 2 years to get this mess straightened out. And, you know, I told him, I said, no, I said, don't start setting dates, because I've been fooled myself so many times. Because when I started this really going active in the mid-70s, I thought, man, we're going to get the people in this country, they'll grab a hold of this information on jury power and grand jury power, and they'll run with it. They didn't. They just didn't do it. And so people ask me, you know, how long can it go? And I say, well, I don't know, but I will tell you what holds it together. It is the ignorance of the American people that is keeping this thing on, you know, the road that we're traveling. It is mental state of a majority of the American people. Their ignorance, their lack of knowledge as to how the system was designed to function. That's what holds the things together. That's why, and we're going to get into this a little later here about, well, Title 18, the U.S. Criminal Code and Section 4, misprison of felony. We've been bringing to the attention of the powers that be of their crimes and such. And they just continue without any hesitation whatever. They continue to scheme and conspire to put us into a state of serfdom. And they can do that because we don't have people. If we could notice a federal judge of a crime, such as a 16th Amendment ratification, if we could go to a federal judge or notice him of this and then tell him, now, you've got to do something because we have complied with 18 U.S.C. Section 4, the misprision of felony. We have complied with the law. Now you have to comply.
Can I interrupt there, Red? Red, can I interrupt just for...
Yeah.
Red, can I interrupt there just a second?
Go ahead.
That misprision is actually a common law writ. A lot of the things that are in the USCs, and you can't use codes against them because those codes in the government de facto are their laws to use against anyone that's declaring themselves a citizen of the United States, which are simply subjects underneath the 14th Amendment. Therefore, you have to first declare yourself being sovereign and free man and within the borders or within the borders of the lawful state using the proper constitution, state constitution. We cannot go after a federal judge at this point. We have to first get back those states and go from there because without those lawful states, we have no standing.
Yeah, well, we don't have grand juries that are functioning. That's the problem.
Well, that's because we don't have standing. We don't have that government, the lawful government, active to do it. Because anytime you play in their little silly monopoly game, it isn't a monopoly game because you're a citizen of the United States, you're a subject, you have no standing, whatever you do is without authority. And that's why most people lose in the end. They let you play a game, win a few times, and then they just cut you off at the knees. And every time that we've gotten involved in a case, and there's only been four or five of them, we've had these United States District Court judges dismiss the case for a frivolous thing like, we've got all the records we need, therefore we no longer need a court case. And they went after him for 2 years. The other case, the court case is still sealed because they never filed a reason for not filing an income tax because we went after them. We went after each one of these people, and they just ran from us. So at that point, they didn't damage us anymore. And, of course, the individual that we were helping didn't have enough money to sue them. But we can't sue them because we don't have any lawful states to do it in, where our authority and our power comes from. Because collectively, we have to be a state, a lawful state, to do that and put those people in prison and go after their seditious acts and treasonous acts. Or we have no power. There's no use of doing it. All they're going to do is run from us, and if they run from us, they change their names or retire or whatever, and it's like you got to start over, and it's like a big monopoly game. Go ahead.
Well, no, Stephen, I think you know, the question at this point is to be clear about what your plan is so that the people that are listening understand really what you're suggesting and how you see it coming to fruition.
Okay. Like in Missouri, I've got probably 5-6 people are willing to follow me, and I'm not even an inhabitant of Missouri, so I've got a couple people there that know what I know to the extent. We could take them, just those 4 or 5 people, and restart the lawful state government, have a new governor, and have a few other places, and we haven't really determined how many of these offices have to be filled to get this lawful state government back on its feet and his heart pounding again. And we would then start notifying all the sheriffs that we did this in all the different counties and all the Army, Navy, whoever's within their state or the rightful people that we need to notify. And, of course, we'd like to sit down with the people in Missouri and sit down and give them all the facts, all the options, so that we can have a collective decision of what we need to do next. But this is my vision, that each of the states need to restore their lawful state government, or the second step's fruitless. You can't have grand juries without the lawful government. You can't do any of those because you have no standing, no power. So we have to start that process. That's going to be a process of getting people together, and I'd be more than happy to sit down with every person in every state, every group, have a teleconference with them, and have them learn how our founding fathers created the government in the first place, because it's already there. All we got to do is, right.
Well, we're having a teleconference in essence right now. Tell us how that happened. Tell us how you can do that with a handful of people, or 12 people, or even 20 people.
Well, if we had 12 or 20 people that would read that one website I got that starts with 1641 or 42 that tells you how our government, and I only put in there the main things all the way up to the formation of the Articles of Confederation, they just need to read those a few times to fully understand what was created and how we jumped from there to a constitution, and that it's we the people that have the power. Every state constitution, the lawful constitutions, all tell you it's for the people, by the people, and the power comes from the people. So it's our power that we've given to these people that's been stolen from us. That's why we have to start operating under the lawful government, because of the government de facto not being our government, we don't have standing to do that. So once we do that, we need to have some letterheads made with the Constitution, some kind of a constructive notice put together, and notify each of these sheriffs and have three people go around and visit with each one of them in each county until we get them all done. Or notify them with registered mail if we don't have time to do all that, because, time's given an essence at this point, because, that talked in Congress said that, we had a mafia type, or not mafia, but a gangster type government, which is what we have today.
And well, that was Michelle Bachmann, and praise God for Michelle Bachmann and a few other people that are like her. There's not too many. All right, if you go to your website under Pattison Articles, how do you get to the website that you're talking about you're wanting them to read?
The one that you need to go to is the one that talks about taxes, war, and I'll go to it here in a second. And it's down halfway, and it's called the one that's called A Timeline Focusing on Taxes, Money, and War. Because every war that we've had has been about money, not necessarily taxes, but I threw that in there in the first place, not realizing it wasn't really taxes, but they had the stamp tax, sugar tax, and a whole bunch of other things. And I've since then read that, they would have been more than happy to pay their taxes if they had had representation in the government in England. And basically, that's what we've lost. We don't have representation anymore, because the representatives and senators of the states are elected by what they're called non-resident aliens, which is what a citizen of the United States is. They're all deemed to live in D.C., and we're out here as a non-resident alien. And we have no power underneath that, what they call character status, venue, and jurisdiction. And so at some point, after the people that read that timeline focusing on our taxes, money, and war, which shows the documentation of how they created the lawful state governments for the people, by the people, I will be providing them with their character, status, venue, and jurisdiction, which I kind of learned accidentally by being a witness in a car accident where I was in a neighboring city where I had to sign this form of my statement, and the police officer had me listed as a non-resident just because I lived in a different city, because it had nothing to do, because each of these cities are part of the government de facto, because they are municipal corporations, just like the state governments that were created that are government de facto are corporations, municipal corporations. They are not
Stephen,
a lawful entity. Go ahead.
Stephen, our resident PhD, Dr. Kate, would like to ask you a question.
Sure. Go ahead, Kate.
Dr. Kate.
Hang on. It just takes a little while to unmute. Hi, Mr. Pattison. Thanks for coming and joining us.
Kate, first off, don't call me Mr. I don't have any
Okay.
Titles.
Hi, Steve. Hi. I'm
Stephen
Kate.
Pattison.
Okay, fine. Okay. Now, You know, I don't, in listening to you and looking at your website, you know, I don't have really any disagreement with your analysis, where we are, so forth and so on, because, you know, in contrast to what you might think, this really, you know, Walls in Our Minds is a really educated audience, or, you know, this is part of Dr. K's Revolution Radio. So we have a lot of shows here where we have covered many of the things you talk about, and I commend you for taking a look at that and the passion with the way you're presenting it here. And at the same time, as, you know, a freedom-loving, you know, God-fearing American, and realizing that time is of the essence right now, I really do believe there is not a straight-line jump right into where you are. I've thought about this a lot and just want to pose this idea. There are a lot of things we have to work on right now, but I think that once we can, or let me put it this way, can you see a path where what you are talking about is absolutely correct and we get there, but in the first instance there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get there. One in particular is, you know, even with you and 100 people standing behind you, where's the militia to support your efforts? The populace, like it or not, needs to get to a place where they can truly understand the depth of what you present, which I think is terrific and is correct. I don't have a disagreement with where you are. But right now, it's people are just waking up to just some basic things, and one of those is that personal power you talk about. And therein, I think, is where there's a good nexus here, because rather than, you know, sort of get the state governments back in power, you know, to where they should be, which, again, I do not disagree with you at all on that premise, maybe the focus should be the individual and taking that power as a sovereign right there. Once you start there, there is more of an investment in taking the right step, which I submit, and I think you would submit, two people would move towards where you are talking about right now. That's where we're all going. That is constitutional governance. That's what it was designed to be. And it's taken a long time. And I'm not saying it's going to take, thousands of years, but it is going to take a while. We've got, I think, a lot of time. So what if your focus started then working on the individual, on the individual power, how that then links to the rest? Because once you grasp your individual sovereignty and where your powers come from, it's easier to grasp what the Constitution was talking about. Easier, and then easier to see your responsibility and your absolute necessity to remove the individuals who are, impeding the way in much the same manner as you talked about. So in a nutshell, I guess, I want to say bravo for that vision and that, you know, looking at that and describing what exactly has happened. You are correct. I'm afraid we can't get there right away before we fix the things we need to fix. We need to do some substantive changing, not Band-Aids, but we need to be able to get to where you're talking about. So I'm pulling that back and suggesting, what about the focus on the individual and the sovereignty and that aspect of individual power that has been taken as a launching point and more focus on that as a launching point to your later points? Sorry, it's, you know, PhD is piled higher and deeper, you know? So that was probably a short question. Okay. There you go. Thank you.
That was a long question. Now, Kate, what I'd like to have you do is come back and ask one real short question so the people out there can hear it, so I can go ahead and answer that, and then ask your next question, and I'll answer it, okay?
Well, let me turn that around and ask you what you think that question was. What I'm saying is that, you know, the vision is fine, and I'm asking a little version of Terry's question, which is basically, can't get there right now, and I'm asking you, what about the focus on the individual? If you focused on the individual, how would your plan move forward?
Okay. The first thing is that the individual needs to know a few things, and we'd be more than happy to help supply any of that documentation. We've done what we call a self-serving declaration, which more or less tells everyone that we are sovereign, that we're born on the land, and that our parents were, and that we were emancipated so that we were lawful and so forth, and that we reside within the limits, borders of the sovereign state, and we don't care if it's any of the 50 states, because we just wait for them to come back and say, well, you know, that wasn't a lawful state.
Wait. What about God? Where is God in this?
God is everywhere. We're part of God.
God is before the state, right?
God's before everyone.
Okay.
Our creator.
Okay, so when you focus on the individual, let's not jump right to the state as far as our, quote, sovereignty. So
well,
right
in
there.
What I'm saying is that once these people come from each state and want to do what we're talking about, restoring the lawful state governments, they have to go through a short educational program, call me, talk to me, so that they understand where their powers come from, which are from our Creator, and that how you can defend yourself from all the unconstitutional, undelegated authorities that the current government de facto is waving on us in one way or another. And we don't even tell them to stop getting a driver's license or anything, because we don't think that's important at this point in our life, because I think the very first thing we need to do is get enough people that become sovereign, know what they're doing, and they can protect themselves and know that they can call me or one of our researchers to provide documents to protect them from any attacks they may have from whoever. And, of course, one of the things they need to know is that we're under a common law constitutional government for the people and by the people. It's because, you know, every country has a constitution, like China's got a constitution, so it's not a constitutional government. It's a common law for we the people, by the people, government. And that has to be pushed into their minds so that they do not make any missteps, because one of the very first things some of these change agents do is ask you, where do you reside? Where do you get your mail? And they always want to throw something in there, because I say, well, I live in my body. And things like that, so that issue never comes up, that we're inside their territory and underneath their jurisdiction. So I look that we need to get the states running, but, yeah, well, I need 12 people or whatever in each state, and the first thing they're going to do is learn how to protect themselves by using common law, where their rights are and how to protect them all and their family and survive for the next 3 or 4 or 5 months. Well, they're
Stephen,
doing all these things.
Stephen, have you put a declaration on your website for people to use? Have you got that on there?
We have the first paragraph in there. If you go to You Be the Judge and Jury, which is where John Kennedy's stuff is, and go all the way down to the bottom, there is a page where it says the system or the conspiracy explained.
You're familiar with John Ainsworth in North Carolina, right?
Yes, I am. I've talked to him, and I couldn't get to first base with him. Now, if you go to You Be the Judge and Jury, which is the very first website, and you page down to the end of that, you will come to a website that states.
Has he not done what you're talking about doing?
No. Everybody's trying to restore or change the government de facto to being a constitutional state, and you can't do it because they have no power. Have they gotten any wins? Have they gotten anybody to do anything? We have United States District Court judges dismissing cases within 10 days. I mean, we can get the governors. Yeah, it's just like the Restore the American Plan or whatever it was called. If they had done their paperwork properly, that would have worked. And they need, and I understand they had some people in each state, and I'd like to have those people come to us. And I have a person that I've contacted that has gotten back to me that said that he has all those names and agrees with what I'm saying that we need to do. But he's so busy trying to make a living that he hasn't gotten back to me yet. And that webpage is called The Conspiracy Explained and Documented. It's like 10 lines up from the end of that page. And you just click on that, and you go down about three-fourths of the way, and there is a document that's...
I guess I'm at a loss. I mean, that I'm looking at John. I'm looking at John Ainsworth, and I'm seeing exactly what you're seeing, that that he's really not getting anybody to do anything. And I'm looking at these. I've seen all the paperwork for the Restore America plan. I rejected it because they were really getting people to sign open powers of attorney without, and also turning their names and social security numbers over to people who really weren't from a particular state, but they were possibly even cooperating with the government for all I know. I mean, there's no reason for me to trust those people. As a matter of fact, if you look at their history and their track record, you have every reason not to trust them. So, again, you come back to, you put a few people together, how are you expecting to get traction where none of the rest of these have gotten any traction? I don't see it without having the enforcement of a well-regulated state militia.
Terry, it's in the law. If the law is properly written, you identify who you are, how you get your power. In other words, everybody on this call needs to go back and tear apart the Declaration of Independence. The very first line that tells you who they are and why they got the power. And none of that paperwork, including the guy from the Carolinas, doesn't do that. And he doesn't explain the United States of America was a Republican form of government underneath Section 4 of Article 4.
Okay, I know people right here in the state of Colorado, and there's a bunch of them. You know, there's probably 60 of them here in the state of Colorado, and basically they participate in two or three different groups, and I have contact with all three or four of those groups, and they've gone out there, they've torn apart the Declaration of Independence, they've even signed on to it themselves, they've written their own Declaration of Independence in some cases. They've rejected their 14th Amendment citizenship. They've done all sorts of things like that. They've even assembled. They've come together. They've tried to do these things. But the best that they've been able to accomplish so far, the best that any of them have been able to accomplish so far, is to simply get the IRS to leave them alone. That's all they've been able to accomplish if they were lucky. In some cases, they're still being harassed. But in some cases, they've convinced the IRS that they're more trouble than they're worth. And so now the IRS has basically kind of just been hands-off with them. And that's the best,
Terry,
that they've accomplished. Yeah.
Terry, basically I can't sit here and tell you exactly what's wrong with their paperwork. But I guarantee you that they didn't do a self-serving declaration. They didn't declare that they were one of the people underneath the lawful republic of Colorado, rather than calling it the state of Colorado or whatever it is under the municipal corporation. They didn't even probably go about their oath of office or get a copy of their oath of office, and they didn't do anything to show their standing or their power against these people. Because the very first time we used it in 1997, the U.S. District or the United States District Court judge ruled to dismiss the case within 10 days. With just a constructive notice that was 47 pages long. Now, there's a lot more than that, just that one, two paragraphs I have there. And I've sent that constructive notice to you. Have you read it?
I certainly did. And I saw some good stuff in that, by the way. I was impressed with some of the stuff in there.
Does it look anything like the stuff that you looked at from the people that used in Colorado?
Well, anything like yes, exactly like no.
Okay. Well, the biggest thing is our livelihood, our freedom is all based on common law. If they used any United States codes, references, whatever, that vacates anything they said in the document whatsoever. They can use the Constitution, they can use the Articles of Federation, or the Declaration of Independence, and common law, period. That's end of story. They use anything else, it's frivolous. They have no standing. They're just going to laugh at them and go on. Now, if they become too big of a problem, they just leave them alone because they have a lot more other people to go after, because all these IRS agents get paid a percentage of what they collect over and above what their wages are. So that's why they're out looking for the cheap people and the people that they can get more money from.
Well, we are going to take about a 2 to 3 minute break here, and we will be back with Walls in Our Minds in just a few moments.
Transgressions, he was crushed for our sins. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our sins. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed. We are healed by your sacrifice. Let the light and crushed for our sins. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed. Transgressions, he was crushed for our sins. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed.
Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I'm here with my co-host, Red Beckman, and we have our guest with us tonight, Stephen Patterson. Stephen, before you launch back in here, I don't know if you're still looking at chat. I don't see your name on the chat list there, but we've got some questions about constructive notice, and one of the questions that I'd like to add to that is have you been using constructive notice just as a defensive measure or also as a proactive measure? And but before we get back into that, I'd like you to take a couple of minutes and think about that. I want to bring Red back in for a second and have him talk about Title 18. Red?
Well, Title 18, Section 4, of course, you know, it says that it's the statute having to do with, misprison of treason, misprison of felony. It has to do with if I know of a crime, I am required by law to bring it to the attention of the proper authorities. Bring it to the attention of a judge. I have it here close, and I'll try to get to it here and read it verbatim. It says, whoever having knowledge of the actual commission of a felony cognizable by a court of the United States conceals and does not as soon as possible make known the same to some judge or other person in civil or military authority under the United States shall be fined not more than $500 or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. And, you know, we started the research. I'm the guy that got the ball rolling back there. and the research on the 16th Amendment fraud, the ratification of the 16th Amendment, started in June of 1980, 30 years ago, and now past the 30 years. And of course, that research was very extensive, and it ended up being about $100,000 just to send Bill Benson out across the nation to all 48 states that we had in 1913 to get the certification of the documents we had. And of course, in the collection now, there's over 17,000 certified documents in that collection. And of course, the judges in our courts are so they are free to do what they want to do. When they are confronted with this Title 18, Section 4, that doesn't bother them. It's no threat to them, because there is no grand jury out there in this country that has ever been informed enough, well enough, to take the bull by the horns, as you might say, and call in the U.S. attorney and call in the different, even federal judges, and ask them questions. Is the 16th Amendment to the Constitution, is it a lawful amendment to the Constitution, or is it a fraud? And the judges don't have to worry about that because of the ignorance of the American people, which is not accidental. The government schools have made sure that that young students are never taught about the power of a grand jury and the proper function of a grand jury. Now, I know that Steve has collected a lot of documents. There's thousands upon thousands of pages of material out there. When I left Montana back in 2003, I burnt box after box after box in my stove in my shop, because I just had such a massive volume of material that there was no way that I was going to move it, and there was no way that I had the time or the will to sort it all out, index it, and file it as it should have been done. One reason I did that was because I had come to the conclusion that our problem in the country is not corporate government. It's not crooked judges and all of that. The problem in this country is a spiritual weakness, a spiritual vacuum out here that people just absolutely are not serving the true God. And the Bible is very clear. If they don't serve the true God, they're going to serve Baal. They're going to serve false gods. And that's what's going on in this country right now. Ignorance thrives, or false gods thrive, when you have an ignorant population. And a population that is governed by propaganda, governed by lies, governed by false information of all kinds. And so the problem is not having enough law. We got enough law, and we've got enough research done. We know what's happened. It was evil men who incorporated Washington, D.C., as they did back there in, right after the Civil War. And there was a lot, we don't really... identify, we talk about corruption in government, and really what we did with the 16th Amendment, basically we uncovered the sin, the violation of God's law by many, many, many people. And it has been continued, it has been cultivated down through the years, and we've got the kind of a mess we have right now. And I can pretty well assure you that it is not going to be solved by us going into the courts and blowing them away with truth. They went no truth if it came up and slapped them in the face. And truth is something that is so scarce in our world today that they really don't have to worry about it. And so, I think that it's vital that all of this documentation that Steve has put together, I think it needs to be organized. I think it needs to be secured. I think it needs to be, archived so that historians in the future are going to be able to look back at our time period, and they're going to be able to see that there were people that were out there that were unhappy. They recognized that things were not going correctly. They recognized what the problems were, but they were overwhelmed by all of the evil that was, around them. And, you're not going to change this country with a few people. It's going to take a lot of people and a lot of spiritual renewal in this country to make a difference. And, I see some of it happening. I know that it's happening to quite an extent, but not nearly enough yet. But as the economic screws are tightened on the American people and the people all over this planet, the economic screws are being tightened on people all over this planet. And the wars that we've got, the conflicts that we've got going on all over this planet, and it's not a great time in world history right now. And so let's hope and pray we can see some repentance. In the last few days, we've seen the federal judge throw out the will of the people in California on the same-sex marriages. The judge has no fear of any kind of a backlash because we don't have the kind of men out there that are capable of doing that. We don't have that well-organized militia that we need. And of course, the federal judge that made the ruling in Arizona on the immigration law, I don't believe that federal judge had any authority whatever to overrule the people and their representation in the state legislature and the governor. The legislature passed that law. The governor signed it. And a federal judge who is an appointed person, a political animal, has a conflict of interest because she is a federal government employee. And I think that this needs to be challenged, and I think it will be. But I guess I've said enough for a while here. Let's get back to what Steve has to say.
Terry, Steve, you want to talk about the constructive notice, or?
Well, I guess at this point, Bill Benson, I think he went to jail, didn't win anything. And, of course, the reason most people go to jail is because it's just one big Monopoly game. And it's their courts. They do what they want to because there's only one law in this land. This law was adopted or when the United Colonies met in Congress in 1974, they claimed the common law of England as the branch of those indubious rights and liberties to which the respective colonies are entitled. If you don't understand why they were entitled to the common law, you need to go read that document, which is the document to the alumni of the Law Department of Columbia. It's part of the Stephens book that tells you the difference between common law and civil law. Now, civil law, in my opinion, after reading and understanding all this, is a misnomer. It's actually common law in civil codes. Civil codes comes from the Roman civil codes, which were on the people that were subjects. And actually, a lot of our government under common law comes from the maxims of law that came out of the Republic of Rome when it was a common law state. And if people don't understand this, they need to read it, ask questions, and get to that point. I researched everybody when I got involved in this back in 92, 93, 94, 95. I called everybody that had a website. I called everybody that I heard about one way or another, and as far as I was concerned, none of them had any wins whatsoever. Let's take Larry Beecraft, for example. I mean, if you hire him to defend yourself in a tax case, he says it depends on what you've done beforehand. And I'm really upset to the fact that Sherry Jackson went to jail using him and Tommy Crier when Tommy Crier had the same evidence, supposedly, and the same attorney, Larry Beecraft, and himself, and he got dismissed. Of course, I don't know if he's won his case completely, because usually even if you win for willfully not filing, which is a big waste of time as far as I'm concerned, because even if you prove that, it doesn't mean you didn't prove that you're not required to file. And that's what we do. We prove to the person through a constructive notice, and I've done it a couple times, where they never came after the individual again. And we haven't had any losses except for one person that did not follow our instructions, and we walked away from him because he wouldn't listen to us and fire his standby attorney that he had, because you cannot be represented by an attorney in their courts because that makes you a subject. You're guilty beforehand. And I guess at this point, the only difference that we saw, in other words, we looked at everybody's documentation, and there's one guy out there that was close to ours that actually got out of jail that Bob Schultz published on, and he went after the fact that he wasn't required to file a 1040 and asked them to prove that he's required to file a 1040, and they couldn't, and he never got put back in jail for not filing his income taxes because that was one of his requirements for getting out of jail early. So at this point, anybody that, you know, I've been asking for almost 20 years for people's paperwork to show me how they won anything, and they haven't won nothing, not a thing, and we never will. And the only way that we can see a way out of this Monopoly game, and it is a Monopoly game because it's their courts, it's their laws, and they're not even laws, they're codes for the subjects. And once someone declares that you've broken that code, you go to jail, unless you use common law and declare that you're sovereign and you're not underneath those codes. And that's the only way out. Only way to have power other than defend yourself with common law is to restore the lawful state governments, because I would like to have my government back. So, Terry, at this point, unless I can answer anybody's questions out there, there's not much more I can say.
Well, about the constructive notice.
Well, the constructive notice can be used in two different ways. The constructive notice is kind of like an affidavit. You're declaring facts to the individual that you can either attack as defending yourself, which we've done so far, or using it against someone because they are acting under sedition under the government de facto, which most of them don't even understand that they're under a government de facto. And most likely, we feel that probably these people, because most attorneys and judges already know of this, most of these people that are not attorneys serving as our state representatives or senators will most likely ask for us to come in and explain it to them. And when we get in there and show them the documentation and spend 8 hours with him, he's going to say, well, what do we do to get back to the lawful state government? And I think 97% of all the public employees, the senators, the representatives from the states, the sheriffs, everybody are going to be on our side, including the military, with the proper paperwork, identifying that you're one of the people within the border.
Hold on. Now, you've stated before, and I hope I'm not mute here, you've stated before that you don't believe it's necessary to refute your 14th Amendment citizenship in your constructive notice. Can you give listeners a little bit of an idea of what you do need to put in that constructive notice?
Anybody wants a copy of our generic constructive self-serving document, which basically declares who we are, and that's kind of like an affidavit, and you can publish it in, we don't even feel you have to do that because, you know, if they question you, as long as you got two witnesses with you, your character and status as being a sovereign and a state citizen, a lawful state citizen, cannot be questioned by any of these people, even if you got a driver's license as far as we're concerned. Because you can be both people, because there's both states. There's a de facto state and the lawful state are both there at the same time. It's like having two businesses side by side. The constructive notice can be used in either way. You're noticing them of their actions of being illegal, seditious, or treasonous, depending on the situation. And all we need is some good people to stand up, come and meet, and be elected as the governor of the lawful states and the other needful officers, and so we can open up the dormant lawful state governments and start having meetings and acting under those and do the same thing that the Continental Congress did through Bob Schultz, and doing it a little bit different because we're coming from the Declaration of Independence, where we declare that we are one of the people. And who we are from a lawful state using the lawful constitution and notifying them of the facts of what the government de facto has done, and they had no lawful authority to do it and put all the facts in there, and it's just like the Declaration of Independence. What are they going to do with it then? They're going to call us in to educate them because they're in a world of hurt. They're operating on treason, and that's serious.
Well, I'd like to get Red back in this discussion. You threw out that Mr. Benson had gone to jail and hadn't accomplished anything, and I think Red deserves an opportunity to talk about Bill a little bit.
Now, Terry, what I said is that's what I believe happened because I wasn't following his case completely, and I guess at this point it's immaterial to what I like to talk about because I don't know of anybody. You know, it's like the plastics plant owner down there in Texas. I met with him and explained to him about his standing and stuff and told him that he was going to jail if he didn't do the proper
Stephen,
thing.
Stephen,
yeah?
The person that does know is Red. Let's let him talk about it.
Yeah, well, Bill Benson, of course, was an employee of the Illinois Department of Revenue as a criminal investigator. And Bill was not an attorney, but he taught a lot of attorneys. He transferred a lot of smarts from himself to a lot of attorneys across the country. Bill had a tendency to make himself a target because he would stand up for what he knew was correct. And he would speak out very loud and clear, and the Justice Department determined that they had to silence him, and so they prosecuted him criminally. And in that case, Judge Plunkett, federal district judge in in Chicago that handled that case. He, and I can't give you the exact words because it's been a while since I've read them and such, but anyway, he had examined our evidence on the 16th Amendment fraud. And he made the comment, which is in the transcript of the case. He made the comment and said, if these people are correct, there is no income tax. Now, we must be correct for the simple reason that they have never been able to come up with one single thing. Where we were incorrect, or where our documentation was fraudulent or anything like that. They sent Bill off to jail, and they tried to kill him. They tried to kill him. He was in poor health. And the doctor at Rochester, Minnesota Federal, that's where they have a federal hospital basically for prisoners, nobody heard from him for, a period of time, and his wife and daughter went over there to from Chicago to see if they could see him, and he was in a wheelchair, totally incoherent. He was basically in a coma. He was tied into the wheelchair. They immediately sent out the word, and people were calling their congressmen, senators, and you might say just raising some total hell. And come to find out, they had he had a medication that was very powerful, apparently, and they. I don't remember the exact amount that they gave him, but it was, I think it was several hundred times what the individual was supposed to have. And they tried to kill him. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. The evidence was there. And but then when they were found out and when they were, identified what they were trying to do and everything, why, then they had to bring him back. They had tried to bring him back, and it was amazing how well, how much they did accomplish. He was in a wheelchair for a long time, and as far as I know, he's still alive today. He's about a year and a half or 2 years older than I am. And after he had been in there, almost the total sentence, and I may be wrong on this because it's been quite a long time ago. When he had been, I think he was sentenced to about 15 months or something like that. When his sentence was about to be completed, then the Seventh Circuit Court in Chicago reversed his conviction. They sat on that decision long enough so that he had to serve most of his time. Now, this is the worst kind of criminal government. This is criminal syndicate business. And, they reversed his conviction. And, of course, then they had to try him again. And talk about putting somebody through hell. They did, and it was all because Bill Benson had the truth. Bill Benson knew he had the truth, and because he is the one that went to the 48 states, he walked into the Secretary of State's offices, the archives and such, and he had the documents put together by the Montana historians. That was people at the grassroots that had put this all together back there, and he knew which documents he needed to have, and he had a hard nose. Bill Benson was a natural-born criminal investigator. We could not have had a more capable or competent individual than Bill Benson to do what he did, because when he walked into those offices and such, he walked in there in a business suit. He had his cufflinks on. He had his tie. He looked like somebody that demanded respect, and he got respect. And he spent weeks in the archives in Washington, D.C. He spent weeks in the state capitol in New York, digging all this stuff out. And the evidence is so solid. It is so unimpeachable. It is evidence that is absolutely complete. There's never been a research project like this one conducted in this country. And,
Red.
Of course, when Bill decided to go, I told him, I said, now, we don't want just the documentation on the 16th. We know that the Montana historians had discovered that the 17th was also a fraud, the ratification. I said, we want for both states. Or for both amendments, pardon me. We want the 16th Amendment evidence, and we want the 17th Amendment evidence. And he collected every bit of it that was available across the country. And Bill has paid a very, very heavy price for being a great American, doing what needed to be done, And the criminal intent of our Justice Department and the judiciary, the evidence is there in Bill's case that we're not dealing with a government. We're dealing with a criminal syndicate. And that's, you know, now, Steve says we didn't win anything. We won a lot of cases. A lot of cases. I'm one of the few people. I got $145,000 back out of them one time in 96. So very few people have done things like we do. But, you see, those kind of things are not recorded in the law books. Those things are not recorded in the law books. You don't get those. The only thing that's in the law books is the cases that lawyers have done, both sides of the argument and such, and they're either equity or admiralty jurisdiction, and they are always in favor of the government, almost 100% of them. Those are the only cases. Now, I've got this one fellow there in Montana that they were breathing down his neck. He was an electrical engineer. He had made a lot of money, a lot of it overseas, in jobs, foreign jobs, and he had a run-in with the Internal Revenue Service back in the early 60s, and he just decided that he was never going to file another income tax return. Well, then they were breathing down his neck, and I formed a letter for him, and Terry's got a copy of that letter. And that letter stopped them cold. And this has been about 5 years ago or so. The gentleman is now well into his 70s, and he has had no problem whatever. And of course, I could give you a list of a lot of people that have had no problem for 20, 25 years, where they've just had absolutely no problem with the Internal Revenue Service, because the Internal Revenue Service have lost too many of these cases. I can tell you about being in court and one time with a fellow that he was just as green as grass. He didn't know that much about what he was doing, but he confronted the judge. He wasn't afraid. He was not afraid to confront that judge and about his constitutionally secured rights under the Bill of Rights and such. And afterwards, we got a good ruling out of that judge, And then the assistant U.S. attorney, actually the number two U.S. attorney in the state of Montana, when we were about a dozen of us out in the lobby discussing this win, and this assistant U.S. attorney came and she told this fellow, she said, "Now, I want you to understand something." She said, "If you ever detect that the IRS is trying to deny you your constitutionally secured rights," she says, "I want to know about it." As near as I know, he's never had another problem, and that's been probably 25 years ago. So it's been, there's a lot of cases out there, hundreds of them, where people have let it be known that they weren't afraid of the IRS, that they would fight them to the last bloody drop, and they back off. I've seen it too many times. And so Bill Benson, getting back to him, he paid a terrible price, and most people that have been battling, I, of course, have battled even longer than Bill Benson, going back to my first battle with him in 1957, I've won every round except for one, and that's still in the cooker. It's still there, and eventually I'm going to win that. I think that they know that I'm going to win it, and so I'm, you know. You can spend a lot of time reading all the cases in the law books, but when you get to the point where you read who wrote the opinion, it will always be a federal judge that wrote the opinion, and you will never find one single case in those thousands upon hundreds of thousands, and I suppose it's millions all told, of cases that are documented in our law books. You will never find one of those judges that's honest enough to put in there that he is a government employee, he is a beneficiary of the tax laws, he is a government agent, and that by his code of ethics, he is not supposed to be involved in that case because of his conflict of interest. They are all corrupt. Every single federal judge in the United States of America today should be prosecuted for several felonies. I am not going to be surprised if we see that happen if the economic screws continue to be tightened on the people in this country, if the government continues to walk all over us, try to walk all over us, or whatever. The Tea Parties are the first real major movement that we've seen that was in opposition to all of this. Where they go, I don't know, but if they don't continue to go where they are in the right direction, there will be others come along and go the right direction. It's going to happen. It's history repeating itself. And so with that, I've said too much, I guess, probably.
Well, Red, couple of things I think we need to talk about. One is that Edgar Steele, you know, if you look at Sherry Jackson, she'd probably be dead right now if there wasn't a whole lot of people letting the prison officials and the government know that they were watching what was going on, that they were following it. They wanted to know where she was, and they expected her to be released. And that pressure probably has saved her life.
Yes.
Well, now we're looking at the same kind of criminal element that you were talking about that went after Bill Benson and has gone after some others like Leo Happy in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Now we've got Edgar Steele that's been thrown in jail, and people can see that on American Free Press. But can you give the listeners a little bit of background on and what's going on with Edgar Steele and how the government is framing him?
Edgar Steele is a very, very competent, very effective counsel lawyer. He is considered anti-Semitic. He is probably the number one enemy of the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, the Jewish influence in this country. He has written, some very, he's a very excellent writer. And so he's made himself a very major target, and he has defended both pro bono some real critical cases around the country. And now they have they've tampered with evidence and manufactured evidence is what they've done, saying that he was conspiring to murder his wife and his mother-in-law. And it's as phony as can be. I don't agree with Edgar and some of his writings and such. He believes that the Jewish people are a race of people, and I don't agree with that. It's a religion. But I am very concerned about him. And the story is his wife, she heard one of the first, they're saying that they have these recorded conversations that they recorded with him on the phone talking to a hired, supposed hired killer who was an FBI informant. And she listened to one of the first tapes, and she said, that is not Edgar Steele. That is not Edgar, his voice. That's not him. Well, then at a later date, of course, they had him hid out, you might say, because nobody could find out where he was at, and then they found out that he's in jail in Spokane, Washington. And so there's a great a grand patriot lady up in that part of the world. She went to see him, and she was able to see him. He's very concerned, of course. But they know that the government is manufacturing this evidence. When Edgar's wife called the FBI and asked when she would be able to hear the rest of the tapes, the bloke on the other end of the phone said, "Well, they're not finished yet." A dead giveaway. And so whether the guy was intentionally giving her a clue or what, we don't know. But Pat Shannon with AFP is riding the herd on that case, and I talked to Pat. In fact, I'm expecting a phone call back from him any time here having to do with the case in Arizona. We're dealing with people who are very, very evil. They're wicked, absolutely wicked, and we need to use the proper definition when we're talking about them and explaining who they are. And I've got a son-in-law. He was talking to an IRS agent, and that IRS agent told my son-in-law, he said, "When I walk in that door, I come in here just like Jesus Christ." Now, that's an IRS agent. Would you agree with me that he is a mental cripple? He is how do you say it? The guy is absolutely rotten to the core. I've been around those turkeys long enough. I know, and I use the word turkey. I'll never forget a lady. Use the word turkey, and the lady says, "You're going to have to apologize to the turkeys."
you're saying he's in jail in Spokane, Washington.
In Spokane, yes.
So we need to get people to make some phone calls to express you know, their outrage, really, that they're holding him as a political prisoner, and that he should be released. He should be able to be bail out. And I want to know how he is doing health-wise, too, should we not?
Yes, because he's had some very serious health problems in the last year or so. In fact, it's like a miracle that he's still alive. And because he's been under a lot of pressure for a long time, and because he gets very involved in the case when he... does a case, and he's done cases for, well, he defended the Aryan Nations thing, and so he has seen the criminal activities of, you know, the Justice Department and the federal judiciary. He has seen it, you know, from angles that you and I never get a chance to see, I guess. And I'm just glad that he's on our side, and I'll tell you, he's not the only attorney out there that have, turned in their Bar Association license. Edwin Vieira is one of them, of course, a very, very competent attorney, an attorney who has defended or prosecuted cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. And they have publicly stated that they cannot live with themselves and continue to be a part of such a corrupt system. And so we've got to watch for these people. And, of course, Sherry Jackson, I have met Sherry Jackson. And let me tell you something, she's one of the most pleasant, nicest people you'll ever meet in your life. And so they had to go after Sherry Jackson because she was an effective voice bringing out the evils of the Internal Revenue Service.
Well, Red, we've got both Dale Hughes and Steve Patterson here. We've got about 10 minutes left, maybe 12 minutes left in this show, and I wanted to give Dale and Steve an opportunity to talk to each other, because Dale has, a good amount of knowledge about constructive notice, and I know he's been working on some things himself, and I'd like to see, you know, have these two guys compare notes a little bit and discuss, you know, some ins and outs of that. Dale, welcome to Walls in Our Minds. Steve, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. You got quiet there, and I didn't know what was going on there. So, Dale, you've been working on some constructive notice, correct?
I'm not that far, actually. I've been working on to gain your sovereignty, there are several things you have to do. One of those things is to divorce yourself from the government, so to speak. Eliminate all the government franchises, one of those being Social Security. A key part of their position is that when you're born, they register you with the Social Security, you know, with the Secretary of the Treasury and all the departments. And when you, without your consent, because it's without full knowledge, without full disclosure, you sign up for a Social Security card. Well, if you read the back of your card, it's not your card, it's their card. And that is a government franchise. And they'll hold you to that forever. Another interesting piece, too, if you'll look, and everybody may be aware of this, but if you look on your 1040 where you put your name and address, it says label. Well, it doesn't say label specifically because it's a label. It's in the instructions. When you look up label in Black's Law Dictionary, it refers to a codicil. What's a codicil? So we look up codicil in Black's Law Dictionary. It has, it's an attachment to a will. Now, where is this going, guys? They've used word art. It's all word art. And when you read through the statutes, when you read through Title 26, it just blows my mind how it just jumps out at you that they have used words to convince us, you know, and the Supreme Court has said many, many times that nobody can tell you who you are or what you are. That's your sole responsibility. That's your sole option. And we tell them that we're sovereign. They have no authority over us. And then once you get your sovereignty, then you work into the constructive notices, part of which is an affidavit of truth, which is a political statement in many ways that you submit to Secretary of State and Attorney General of the state and federal to put it in the public record, get it up a field. This is, I'm essentially not part of your system. Your statutes don't apply. I follow the Constitution and God's law. I don't follow your rules. You essentially develop a diplomatic immunity.
Steve, you want to address that?
I don't disagree with what he's saying. No, when I said earlier that no one won anything, I meant we didn't win our freedom back. I mean, you can't go to a bank, you know, the majority of the people can't go to a bank without having a number presented to them. And that's a Social Security number.
But that's true. But then you have to hold your position, hold the course, and present them with the law. And I can help you with that if you need that. Present them with the law that says it is unlawful for them to ask you for that number.
The problem with that, it doesn't win anything in getting our country back because they are bankrupting our whole country, and we're going down the tubes.
I agree.
All those whims and attempting to drive without a driver's license or operating without a Social Security number, I don't recommend anybody to do because it's just one big waste of time. Because you don't win anything with it. When I say win, your freedom back and our country back, where we, the people, print our own money and don't pay interest to somebody else for it.
That
would be one of the first things that the sovereign, lawful union states could do once they're restored. Because we have no standing any other way. We have common law to use for defensive purposes, and that's what we did in the Glenn Hughes case. And the United States District Attorney dismissed the case within 10 days with prejudice, meaning it'd never be heard again. And he never heard another thing from the IRS. And why does anybody want to waste all that time when one 47-page document will get the case dismissed and you walk away without losing any more money? Now, if they stole some money for you, and we have another gentleman that's in our research team that one of his friends got, I think, 20-some thousand taken from his business account, and we got it back in less than 20 days with just a letter.
That's exactly right, because they don't have any jurisdiction. They have no right to do that under law.
That's true.
And the
other problem I have with Red is that he keeps saying it's our law. It's not our law. It's these small groups of people that created these new state governments. That's their law. Because it's their constitution they created, their government, and their laws against all of us non-resident aliens, which are U.S. citizens that are supposedly residing in D.C. with a Social Security number.
Right. And through the and you're exactly right, through the constructive notice is how you get that money back. If they come in and unlawfully take money from you or anything from you, or burden you in any way, the constructive notice is the way to get it back. Absolutely.
Sure.
What I have done is taken that one step further and essentially made it public record.
Sure. You know,
and once that occurs, you know, I said on the chat a minute ago, and God bless you, Red, and I have met some great attorneys, But Corpus Juris Secundum, Chapter 7, page 801, paragraph B, specifically says that attorney's first responsibility is to the court. Now, if you think about that just a little bit, their second responsibility, and then right behind that it says their second responsibility is to their client. Well, now, wait a minute. The court is the state. The court is the federal government. Their first response, they're not representing me. Their first responsibility is to the court. That's a little unnerving to me. So through the constructive notice, you can take these things to the court pro se without having somebody there to influence you in the interest of the court.
And your name was Gary, right?
I'm Dale.
Dale, it's not per se, it's proper persona.
Pro se.
No, it's not pro se. Because you're acting as your own attorney, and then you, therefore, declare your allegiance to their court.
That
and have
correct.
To follow all their rules and regulations. We don't do that.
Yeah, that is correct.
Because proper persona and free men, we're one of the people that owns all that collectively
correct.
With the other free people.
Correct.
So,
you know, the hierarchy
we go in
is
with,
the...
Go ahead.
The hierarchy is the creator of heaven and earth, man, and man-created government. And the government has put themselves above the creator of all things. So you have to make them recognize that you are not going to accept that and that you are in charge because they're your servant.
So in your constructive notice, you make note that you're one of the free people then, right?
Exactly.
Well, you never want to use the word proper per se then. Go look that up in Bouvier's dictionary. And you should only be using Bouvier's dictionary. Black's Law Dictionary is only for those attorneys.
Well, that's true, but you gotta understand their language to understand what they're implying.
Yeah, but when I'm using something against them, I'm using my language, which comes from Bouvier's.
Right.
And that's the dictionary that was adopted by Congress as the dictionary for our government.
Gentlemen.
And the Black's Law Dictionary is for the attorneys in the government de facto. When the very first Black's Law Dictionary was created, that's when the de facto government took over.
Gentlemen, we've only got about 2 minutes left in the show, and I just want to ask you guys a question. I've watched a lot of this constructive notice going on, and I think that on a defensive basis, I think that what was put out there in the Glenn Hughes case, for example, has some merit. I think it actually is fairly consistent with what Red has been recommending, and I believe that we need to certainly be challenging the authority of these courts. The question is, how is this going to clarify things for the people and so that we can get them organized and get them to start to understand really how they're going to go about taking their power back? Because I believe that if we don't get that grassroots organization going and get a reasonable education process working where they can know how they are going to go about acting like sovereigns, I don't see us getting the kind of organization together and getting back to where we really can control the common law situation and have our grand juries under our control, have judicial reform. You know, if we unplug from the system, it tends to create a disunity situation and not bring people in. It doesn't really do much to quell the fears of the police state. And I'm thinking that we've got to give these people a sense of belonging again in their community and get organized on the community level and start taking our states back. And I question how, you know, this process of basically disengaging from the community as a whole is going to accomplish that.
I'm afraid we're about not necessarily disengaging, Terry. I'm protecting myself, and I'm taking that money that would normally go to the Internal Revenue Service of the U.S. government and the Social Security Administration and keeping that. Now, the $64,000 question is what you just hit on. How are we going to organize the people and give them the knowledge? And this is really simple. I mean, I've been studying this stuff for a couple of years now, and it's really simple. When you get right back around to 12 o'clock where you began, it's not difficult.
I agree with you.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing, multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne. And at his feet, they'll cast their golden crowns. Whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down when the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured 100 weight and penny pound, when a man comes around. Name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him.